Edie is delighted to be partnering with Lloyds Bank on the journey to creating a more sustainable and inclusive future for people and businesses aligned to a just transition. Lloyds Bank actively seeks out opportunities to support their corporate and institutional clients to finance and deliver a just net zero transition, benefiting companies, communities, and the wider economy. To find out more, search Lloyds Bank Just Transition. Lending is subject to status.
Hello and welcome to Edie's Sustainability Uncovered, the podcast for anyone working in or passionate about environmental sustainability and climate action. Coming up in today's episode, we're recording live from ED24, our biggest face-to-face event of the year. We've convened hundreds of sustainability, energy and ESG professionals in London for 2 days of inspiration, innovation, co-creation, networking and some plant-based snacks. We also have more than 100 speakers on our jam-packed agenda. So we'll be meandering through our event venue to bring you the top takeaways from experts in the fields of purpose-led business, nature stewardship and the circular economy. I've also received an invite to a London-based pop-up bar to celebrate B Corp Month, March. So join me for some ethical rum and ruminations about effective, sustainable business collaborations. All of that and more in this episode of Sustainability Uncovered. Yes, hello and welcome along to the Sustainability Uncovered podcast broadcast by Edie in partnership with Lloyds Bank. You're listening to the voice of Edie's content editor, Sarah George, and I'm joined for this episode by editor Matt Mace. So Matt, I'm handing over to you to set the scene as we begin ED24. I admit that I've spent most of my time so far running around trying to find somewhere to stash my suitcase and find a coffee machine.
Yeah, I was really excited in that intro when you said we're going to be meandering through all the content, and at the moment it feels more like a kind of whiplash zigzag through all the kind of audiences. I think we've got like 700 people here across both days, which is just a huge number of sustainability professionals, which while is kind of great and really kind of empowering, also means there's a lot of familiar faces, people that want to say hi, lots of real kind of high-level discussions that, and I'm blowing Edie's own trumpet here, you're not really going to hear anywhere else. I think this agenda is generally kind of leading in that sense. So it is busy. There's like a weird buzz in the kind of foyer at the moment where everyone's just catching up with faces they haven't seen in a while. And I think whenever you do like big events like Edie, there's always that kind of scene set at the start of the day where people kind of do the Slido thought leadership of how they're feeling. And it's all kind of like anxious and challenged, and there's that kind of energy there at the moment. I'm going to be interested to see how it changes across the 2 days, and that as the kind of the challenges are laid bare and the optimism starts to kind of shoot through.
So what you're saying is that you're here for catharsis?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, I need people to drag me with them on this optimistic journey.
Fabulous. From my point of view, it's great to see everyone in person when most of your work is digital and when you are just a name on a screen and a disembodied voice on a podcast.
Yeah, I do agree with that, but I also have to wear a suit today. If I was at home right now, I could get away with a shirt and some tracky bottoms. So I've had to go full suit today.
I have absolutely no sympathy for you there. But something else that's different aside from Matt's attire is our location. So we usually sit around in our studio, in our offices, and host 3 guest interviews that we've all recorded on different times. And then we do our editing magic and stitch them together. But as we've said, we've got dozens of speakers here and hundreds of other friendly faces, plus some new contacts too. So we have all of this sustainability expertise at our fingers. So instead of doing our usual format, I'm going to set us off on something of a podcast relay across the conference and set the challenge of sticking to the theme of business leadership, which is our monthly theme. This actually might not be that much of a challenge now that I'm thinking of it, because it's such a broad theme. But Matt, I'm shamelessly going to dump the podcast recorder, which I'm going to call the relay baton, on with you. So can I set you the task of trying to secure a speaker from the strategy stage this morning?
Yeah, I can do that. I'm sure there's someone who will speak to me. Yeah, I'll 100% guaranteed I'll deliver on that.
Fabulous. Thank you.
So yes, I have successfully completed the task set out by Sarah for this morning. I've combed around first morning session at ED24 and I have found a speaker for this segment of the podcast. I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by Natalie Campbell, the co-CEO of Bellew Water and a London mayoral candidate. Natalie, thank you so much for agreeing to step aside from the network and join me in this rather kind of dingy side room just for a bit of peace and quiet.
Thanks for having me.
And
You have literally just come on from a session that you were discussing on, very much focused on climate-related policymaking in the UK, kind of where and what needs to change. What were your kind of key takeaways from that discussion?
My takeaways from the discussion were that we need to move with urgency. We had slides presented that showed very clearly, unless we act immediately, we have a very significant climate emergency on our hands. And the lack of political leadership that we're currently witnessing and desire to put real meaningful action out there has meant that there's a malaise and an apathy around climate when there really shouldn't be. Because if we distill this down to what it means for every individual, it's about living a better life. It's about making sure that there is food on the table. It's about making sure that we can heat our homes. It's about making sure that we can get through a summer without extreme heat. It's about making sure that our homes aren't flooding over the winter. These are basic things that if you speak to people, you know, it resonates, and you don't even need to say the word climate. You just need to talk about living a better life. And we've got to a political space where politicians have absolutely forgotten that.
And in light of that kind of, I suppose, void where political leadership should be, what is the kind of role that local leaders, mayoral candidates like yourself, and even councillors have in, I suppose, shaping national policy? I mean, it looks like we're on course very much an election year, so there's a risk that, I suppose, net zero and climate becomes politicised as a kind of a debate, whereas, as you said, this is just it's something that needs to happen. So what role do you and councillors have in taking a step back and reiterating that message? Yep.
Well, the first thing is to remind people that there are elections this year, right? The mayoral election is the 2nd of May, and you have a choice in terms of who you vote for and what they say they're going to do to deliver climate resilience in London. We will have a general election before some point in January, you know, people are saying possibly the autumn. You can vote for candidates that are talking about making your lives better related to that broader slate of sustainability and climate. When we look at London yesterday, the current mayor announced building 40,000 council homes as a new target. Okay, but he should also be talking about the trade-offs. London will not be a net zero city by 2030 if we're building that level of council home, and that's not even including private developments. So be honest with people, because A, we can handle it. B, if we make it about the basics of how we live, you know, the basics of the Maslow's hierarchy, people can then make an informed decision about who they want to vote for. But at the moment, what we have is thrown out targets, thrown out statements, divisive conversations about climate, ultimately to scare people into what is currently in action.
That's a great point about the kind of the fear and scare aspect of it. I think that's very true. And obviously a lot of people at ED24 today kind of in the business space. So they're kind of, I don't want to say more clued up, but they know a bit more about the science behind it and maybe are driven more by optimism than fear, which is a great place to be. But in terms of the role that they can play in really kind of advocating or even just holding policymakers account and shaping this kind of green agenda at a political front, what role do you see businesses having?
Businesses need to crack on regardless. So as co-CEO of Baloo, we started with our governance. We changed our articles to be about delivering the sustainable development goals, 6, 12 and 13. 6 is water access, 12 is responsible consumption production, and 13 is climate action. And in doing that, it means the way that we show up as a business is very different. We don't put financial profit first unless it's about doing good. So we give all of our net profits away, and then we invest in nature-based solutions in the UK. And I'm joined in this room right now by Nolan Wright, who is my director of supply chain operations. And every single day that he does his job, he's not just thinking about operational efficiency, it's is this the right thing for the environment? Is this the right thing to do with the partners, the supply chain partners that we have? And I think businesses can absolutely move forward and do good despite government position and policy. And maybe it's going to be businesses that step up and actually get us to a place where we can deliver these targets, because there is a big political vacuum.
And in light of, I suppose, the rest of the year, and not just because it's such a big one for policy, but I suppose through the lens of achieving the SDGs, you know, that window shrinks every day in that sense. In terms of what true business leadership looks like, you described what Baloo is up to, and I think that's not the norm yet at all. So what steps do businesses need to take to switch away from, I suppose, kind of incremental doing less bad to more transformative stuff like Baloo is up to?
You've hit the nail on the head. There is absolutely no room for doing less bad. Any business that's in that space way of thinking will not have a business in the next 5 years. Like, sustainability is entwined with business longevity, and we need to really understand that. What's important for us is to make sure that we're being courageous, to make sure that we do the uncomfortable thing, to make sure that we don't put, you know, financial gain ahead of doing the right thing. And when you take that approach, when you lean into your purpose, Baloo's purpose is to change the way the world sees water. It's not deliver X return for shareholder. Every decision we make is very different. And there are more businesses that are operating in that way. What I don't necessarily see is those businesses being transparent or taking an open source approach to the way that they do things. And that's the next phase of where I think we need to get to. And with Baloo, we publish an impact report every single year. It's our purpose P&L. We give you every data metric within the business and say, copy it if you want to. These are our partners. Work with them if you want to. We need to get to that place faster. And the collective action, the collective movement of businesses doing that, small, medium, and big, will get us, I hope, to a place where we are supporting neighborhoods, communities, cities, towns, to build their own understanding of sustainability, climate resilience, and a better future. And I say better in that broader sense when I go back to what I was saying around food on the table, you know, a home that you can afford to heat, and the wider environmental piece of how we live.
So a great note to finish on. You mentioned kind of collective business action. I know there's hundreds of sustainable fish out there, and many of them were trying to talk to you after your session just to kind of thank you for some real key insights you made. So I won't hold you in this room any longer. I'll let you go out and network. But Nancy, it's been a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
And I'm going to hand back over to Sarah now, who has our next guest for the podcast.
Yes, thank you, Matt, for getting the ball rolling with our live on-site podcast from ED24. For this next part of the podcast, it's great to be joined by another woman leading in sustainability and also working in beverages, Louisa, who is the co-founder and chief operating officer at Toast Brewing. Louisa, thank you so much for joining us. How have you found your day so far?
Yeah, it's been great. Thank you so much for inviting me to be here.
No, thanks for coming along. So for those who are listening and weren't here, we have just had a panel here in the strategy stage all about the circular economy and how we can collaborate and advocate for progress in this field. So what were your key takeaways from this panel, either something that you prepared beforehand or something that you discussed on the panel?
I think for me, there was a lot of conversation about waste and how we better manage waste by using the circular economy. So thinking about how those materials can be recovered and reused, quite often downgraded rather than upcycled or recycled. But yeah, very much focused on the waste solutions. I think there is a lot that needs to be done to think about resource efficiency and actually how we are focusing on reducing the extraction from nature, from natural resources, and yes, using the circular economy as a solution to that, but being driven by the need to reduce the amount of extraction from the planet.
Yeah, and to be honest, from where I sit, I used to get all manner of news about this a couple of years ago, lots of reports, lots of company commitments, but nowadays I'm seeing more on climate, probably partly because of the energy crisis, partly because people are off doing the work, which is fantastic, but then partly I think because governments are sort of sidelining this as they get on with energy efficiency. So I wanted to get your views on whether we do have hope to get circular economy policies and more joined up thinking on this back at the top of the table in this election year.
I'm not hopeful for this election year, but we absolutely do need to have it back top of the table. So yeah, the whole principle behind the circular economy is that we need to reduce the amount of resources that we're taking from nature. So that has implications, obviously, for issues like biodiversity. The production of many of the products and services that we use has embodied emissions within food. The food system is responsible for about a third of greenhouse gas emissions, while we waste a third of all the food that's produced. There's a direct correlation between tackling the climate emergency and the biodiversity crisis that we face and the circular economy, and the circular economy can offer some of the solutions that we need.
So on the panel, there were two sort of hot buttons on this, one on policy and one on collaboration. So something we know that businesses are looking to do, something that gets talked about a lot abstractly, but sometimes there are practical barriers, including things like fears about competition law. So what were your takeaways on collaboration from the panel?
I think collaboration is absolutely key. For many, the circular economy starts within your own business, your own organisational boundary, looking at a waste problem and looking at how you can back integrate it. But really, we do need to be looking at it at a systemic level, working with different industries, working with consumers, but also, yeah, working with our competitors. As a very practical example, we took on some investment from Heineken about 18 months ago. We are working on how we can share our experience and our knowledge around working with the bakery industry to tackle the waste issue, and shared that intel with Heineken, part of their net zero strategy, their circular economy strategy, to see if that can be used to reduce the amount of malted barley that's needed in the process. That is the biggest part of the carbon footprint of a beer. So if we can reduce that by using a waste stream, then that's really transformational. We need the big brewers in my sector to be leading on these changes that will open up the doors and enable action for lots of smaller companies. I think it's the same in a lot of industries. Some of the restrictions that are faced by smaller businesses can be taken away through the collaboration of organisations at a much bigger level.
I can imagine that. And we've skirted around there the fact that the circular economy isn't just a circular economy issue, it's also a biodiversity issue, climate issue, and it can tie into social sustainability as well, especially in food, I think. And there's a growing recognition of that in conversations. But what would your advice be to a business that's really trying to de-silo all those things and look, as you say, holistically at the circular economy?
That's a great question. Well, you can use techniques like an LCA, a life cycle analysis assessment, that enables you to look not just at carbon, but your impact on land, your impact on water systems, air pollution, etc., and using those models to see where your hotspots are as a business. It may be that one particular ingredient or material that you use has a high impact on multiple of those factors, and so focusing then on that material or that ingredient is the best use of your resources.
A growing theme today that it's all about impact really rather than intention or marketing. So thank you so much for your time, Louisa. I'll let you get cracking with the rest of your day, but thank you for hopping on the podcast.
Thank you.
So we've spoken to two super inspirational challenger brands so far, so I'm going to set myself a little challenge of finding a senior sustainability leader from a big multinational to add that level of perspective. Wish me luck. So the coffee is flowing and so is the conversation. We are well into day two now at ED24. So I'm sitting recording this on the 21st of March, just over the halfway point in this conference. We've welcomed around 600 people, I think, to this site, which is an obscene amount of people to think about. And it's great to be capturing some of the takeaways. And for this next part, it's great to be catching up with an old familiar face who I haven't spoken to for a while personally, Andy, who is the head of sustainable procurement at Diageo. So Andy, welcome along. How are you finding it so far?
Hi Sarah, yeah, it's a real privilege to both meet you again and be here at the event. I think it's been really interesting, really exciting. You can really feel a buzz around the place. So I've just come from the Scope 3 sessions, so a panel just before my slot, which was covering Scope 3 in terms of how you approach it and manage it, and then my session in terms of some of the core learnings that we've drawn through as part of our journey to Scope 3. But some really, really exciting and interesting observations, insights from the panel session that preceded mine, and some really interesting and telling kind of stories in terms of not only how different organisations have taken different approaches and drawn through different learnings, but also as a result, perhaps more standardisation and a greater level of coming together or recognition of the need to come together to drive more effective change, particularly when we're looking at how we engage our suppliers and standardise the ask, simplify the ask of them as part of that journey.
Yeah, Scope 3 is definitely always a hot topic, especially with new disclosure requirements coming in the US and the EU. So if you had to take one tangible to-do item from that panel that you'd disperse for the listeners, what would you say?
I think the most important thing that's come out from the panel, and I think we've seen it ourselves as well, is very much about focusing on your reporting requirements from a Scope 3 perspective on the basis of decision making. So how do you structure it to make effective decisions and drive practical action? And as part of that, that will enable you to refine your footprint as you progress and then actually improve your ability or the granularity of your reporting in future. So decision making first, reporting requirements kind of moving along in parallel with that.
Yeah, this was a theme in a panel that I sat in, same time, different stage, all about avoiding greenwashing and green hushing. And essentially the crux of that was looking at impact and investing for impact and being transparent about that. And something that came up a lot was essentially, is all of this about carbon? How can we avoid carbon tunnel vision? When will we be asked to look at Scope 3 nature or Scope 3 water? So from your work, is that work underway? Is there a risk of carbon tunnel vision? And if so, what can we do to get businesses to really look at things like water stewardship, nature risks, social, not as separate agendas, but as interlinked?
Yeah, so I think for me, there is still a risk for a number of organisations, particularly when they're resource constrained. Obviously, they're going to focus on what they believe to be the primary challenges for their organisation. But from our perspective at Diageo, we're really clear about the range of risks and the need to address those collectively. And I think what's really evident is if you approach this as an integrated approach, then actually it drives much greater effectiveness and much greater efficiency as well. So the real practical business benefits from taking that integrated approach rather than looking at those core challenges as silos. So I think the more we can do to unpack that and share that with our peers and with suppliers, the more effectively and the quicker we can drive collective action towards an integrated approach.
And something else we've heard about, like the fears, is that you try and sell the opportunity to the business, they only want to hear about the risks. You try and talk about the long-term risks, they want to hear about the short-term. I know that procurement has had to face a number of fires in recent year and had to be really reactive. But do you think we could enter an era where we look at long-term planning? And if so, what would be your advice to strategize for long-term resilience rather than responding to things as and when they pop up in procurement and supply chain?
Yeah, so I think for me, there is a growing recognition of the need to lean into those long-term risks. We're doing the same within Diageo. Obviously, some of the regulation as it comes through will drive a greater focus on that. But again, I think we're starting to see more businesses recognise that, you know, when people talk about, oh, we want to do this for our children and our grandchildren, in reality, we're seeing a number of the impacts play through now, and therefore a lot of these risks are really kind of tangible at the moment. So that's helping, I think, to drive a greater focus, greater awareness in terms of the need for long-term thinking as well as short-term thinking.
And you mentioned there as well the need to sell this as an opportunity. So that's what we're focused on, all is about solutions, proving this is possible. Do you have any further advice on how to get people out of that risk immediate mindset and into that opportunity mindset?
Absolutely. I think for me, it's all about efficiency. And one of the key things that I talk about with both my team and with our suppliers is a focus on resource productivity, which I think is really crucial, because for those organisations who aren't yet on the journey or maybe struggling to understand how they get on the journey, talking about resource productivity enables them to start taking real practical action, but in a way which not only drives a reduction in their environmental footprint, because the less we use, the less impactful we are, but also typically will drive real financial benefit, real economic benefit for those organisations. So I think thinking about it in that way starts to enable those organisations to understand the opportunity, the value, and then as a result engage at a deeper level to drive greater transformation.
Great, thank you so much for all your top tips and tricks, Andy, and for sharing your insights from your panel. I'll let you get cracking and network and enjoy your cup of tea, but thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
That's great. Thanks, Sarah. Real pleasure talking.
And with that, I'm going to head outside of the ED24 venue for a moment, and I'd like to say that it's just for some fresh air, but we've actually been tempted by a cocktail at On Purpose, a pop-up bar here in central London, where the only options on the menu are those from B Corp certified brands. So join me there.
ED's Sustainability Uncovered podcast is hosted in partnership with Lloyds Bank. We're delighted to be partnering with Lloyds Bank on the journey to creating a more sustainable and inclusive future for people and businesses aligned to a just transition. Lloyds Bank actively seeks out opportunities to support their corporate and institutional clients to finance and deliver a just net zero transition, benefiting companies, communities, and the wider economy. To find out more, search Lloyds Bank Just Transition. Lending is subject to status.
So for this next part of the podcast, it is a pleasure to be out and about, working at a bar, combining two of my favourite things, which are journalism and rum. I am at X and Y near Marble Arch for the UK's first ever pop-up bar, combining so many B Corp certified drinks brands. There are 15 certified brands here, and I'm delighted to be joined by the CEO of one of these brands, as well as one of our friends from B Lab UK. So thank you both for your time. Could I get a quick introduction around the table, starting with you, Philip?
Of course. Pleasure to meet you and be here. My name is Philip Everett Lyons, founder and CEO of Hatiers. We're the second in the world certified B Corp brand. In rum, very proudly just behind Montagna rum in Colorado.
And Tom?
Great, yeah, really good to be here too. My name's Tom Ebert and I'm the Director of Impact at B Lab UK, the home of the UK's B Corp movement.
Great, and I love doing a podcast, but the only issue is that people can't always see what we're up to. So for those who are listening, could you describe a bit about where we are, which is the On Purpose pop-up bar?
Indeed. Well, this is your bar in a way, so you should describe
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Right? Well, that's kind of you to say, but every year, B Corp Month coming round, you suddenly grasp together as what you can to bring other brands together and collaborate. Now, this is our second year in a row we've brought what we call the Sustainable Drinks Cabinet together. This year, there's 15 of us. Last year, there were only 8. And it's about bringing sort of purpose-led brands together to show our industry what could be the future of when we're imbibing together. You know, one drink might plant one eighth of a tree, for example. So it was an idea of bringing lots of brands together. And my surprise that every time we just pick up a phone call, everyone says yes at every stage. Do you want to be involved with it? Absolutely. Do you want to commit time, budget, staff? Yes, we'd like to. So it's a great success so far. But the bar itself is called On Purpose because we want to really dig deep into each brand has their own agenda in what they're doing in sustainability and within their businesses. So it's a real highlight opportunity to share those journeys, those stories, and anything from mental health to 100% organic or recycled glass or energy and reduction. So it's an opportunity for every brand to have that voice and show the future of how our drinks industry can behave, and we encourage it.
And I understand it isn't a case that you just come in here and know that your drink that you purchase is doing something good. This is also an event space and an opportunity for communication. So why is it so important for B Corps to come together and communicate the message and spread awareness about what the community is doing?
So, I mean, we would say that the B Corp movement here in the UK has achieved amazing things in terms of the growth that we've all been on over the past, since 2016, but particularly over the past 3 to 4 years, now just about approaching 2,000 B Corps. And in one way, this is a chance for us as a movement collectively to take stock and to celebrate that, but also to talk about and explain and tell our story in terms of how business can be different, how it can create change, and how ultimately business can be a force for good.
And also we get the opportunity to share across industries and from SMEs to multinationals in one space, and just give a sort of more informal view into activities in each business and what their approach to a certain matter is. So it's a communal space that I think the hosts here at X and Y have managed to accommodate only 20% of requests, because it's been such a popular venue to host different businesses to come together and to look into each other's businesses.
And this idea of collaboration very much sits at the heart of the B Corp movement. So the Declaration of Interdependence is sort of at the heart of the idea, and sort of comes from the first days of what it means to be a B Corp. And obviously, in our economic system, competition is really put at the heart of our narratives, and that sort of sense of you must win as an individual or a single organisation, business, to be able to say you are a success. And as a B Corp movement, we say collaboration is equally important, and in terms of a way of achieving systems change, really is essential. And this bar is one of many examples of B Corps working together collaboratively to achieve change that goes beyond the boundary of any individual business.
And I'd imagine that something that could be learned a lot from each other in this community this month will be to do with communications and how we get it right, not just for the month but year round. And we know this is something a lot of brands are trying to fine tune, especially at the moment now that the UK is officially in a recession. So I'd love to hear about your learnings in terms of communicating B Corp, trying to make your brand stand out and resonate with customers at this moment in time.
That's a very interesting point. I don't think we actually got the full answer to that as yet. We were at an event yesterday with B Lab and the CEO breakfast, and I know that Nick Canny at Innocent CEO Innocent Drinks raised exactly that question: is how do we continue to communicate this with our consumers, and collaboration between drinks brands to either amplify message or purpose, and the message might be, you know, collective marketing budget. If you look at it on a fundamental, you know, how do we say, well, actually, let's align slightly in one direction, and there is no solution to that right now. However, as an example of a spin-off just from this project that we've put together in the bar we're sat in now, we've already got another, I think it's about four or five events planned this year, which we can invite all the members of the Sustainable Drinks Cabinet to reconvene on and be sole suppliers to much larger scale events as a sort of sounding board or an echo chamber of, at this event you're enjoying only B Corps, and this is the collective power that we have together. And it might not, those events, we wouldn't probably have, Hattiers wouldn't have been with the budgets that we would have required, but collectively we can achieve it. So there's a lot of collaboration and I suppose a little bit of hanging on coattails sometimes, but I think we've talked a little bit about competition, and competition with B Corps actually it dissolves. There is no such thing as our competition, because we're here also using that B Corp momentum to bring more to the movement. We want to see not 10% of the back bar being B Corp brands all performing above the standards of our peers. We want to see everyone. You know, that's the end goal. Utopia is what we're after, and so it'll get further and further towards that. So as a testament, I think we became B Corp when there were only sub 400 B Corps in the UK, and now almost 2,000 when we recertify. So it's changes afoot.
And I guess the good news, if you are a mission-driven business or want to be a mission-driven business, is that we know that people in Britain want to work for, shop with and invest in mission-driven businesses. So research by B Lab UK shows that people want to contribute to the success of their company more when it's a B Corp. That 71% of UK B Corp community feel that it's helped them improve their employee engagement, retention and recruitment. And we also see higher levels of growth among B Corps than among the general business population. So I think there's an absolute thread that runs through all of this, which is that the future of business is mission-driven business, and that's not something that just feels right, but also we have the data to show that.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I'm aware that we've only got a set amount of time, partly due to podcast constraints and partly because I'm eyeing up the mocktails that are on the shelf over there. So I was hoping to close with essentially your advice to listeners on brands looking to certify. I'm sure we've got people listening that are considering certification for their brand, looking into how to do this. So it'd be great to end with like a top tip on certification from each of you. So Philip, what did you learn from certifying Hattiers?
My tip is to reach out to your peers in the industry. So if I get wind of a drinks brand thinking about B Corp certification and the first time they log on to the impact assessment and start that journey, I'll pick up the phone and say, how can we help you? And it's not shortcut offering, it's more so as maybe demystifying some of the language or showing the relevance in our industry. But I can promise you now, if you phone any one of the representatives or get in contact in your industry, then there'll be an open door. And that's competitive base as well, you know. So yeah, just reach out. Industry specific is useful, but just find another B Corp to give you some early advice.
If I can have two tips, I guess the two things that I would say is that if you're going towards B Corp certification, I'd really say start from purpose. So start from why you're doing this, what it is that why your business exists beyond making a return for your shareholders. And that will form the basis of you creating the change in the various areas that are needed to make your business genuinely run for all stakeholders rather than just for your owners. I think the other thing I'd say is, and I was talking to a fan about this yesterday at the event Philip was at, is that it's very easy for you as a leader or you as a founder to think that this certification process needs to sit on my shoulders. And what the founder I was talking to said yesterday is that he was weighing up whether or not B Corp certification should be on his priority for last year. And he asked his team, and all of them said, this is absolutely the top of our priority and we're going to take it off you and do it for you. For him, that was a real affirmation that this was absolutely the right thing to do. And it, I guess that's, if you like, the collaboration internally, if you like, that make sure that this is a collective rather than an individual leader.
Great, well, thank you so much for your top tips. I think this has been something of a three C's, so collaboration, communication and certification. So thank you for your top tips on all of that, and hopefully you enjoy the event and the drinks this evening. Thank you both so much.
Thank you very much.
So that's just about all from this special Live from London edition of the Sustainability Uncovered podcast. We are now back in the makeshift office here at the end of day two. People are probably starting to take things down around us outside, so I'm in here to avoid any clattering and clanging. So Matt, how have you found this experience?
Tiring, I think is the answer. But in a kind of good way. It's like it's not information overload, but you come to these events, you take on so much information. It's kind of mentally tiring as well as just physically being around, talking to people, walking around. I've learned like more in what 2 days than I probably would have in months of just kind of researching in a laptop. It's just kind of feels like I've got my ear to the ground again, and I'm able to hear what our audience is really focusing on, what their hopes are and aspirations, and it's like invigorating. So I'm spiritually lifted, physically depleted.
Yeah, so by the time this podcast goes live, I think we'll be heading into a long weekend here in the UK for Easter. So I hope everyone that's listening and that did attend is feeling refreshed, ready to take those thoughts and put them into action. So that's just about everything for this episode. But if you have got FOMO listening to this, don't worry, you can already register your interest in coming along next year to what will then be ED25 by visiting event.ed.net/forum. Once again, that's event.ed.net/forum. And if a year is too long to wait, you'll be pleased to know that we're hosting our next face-to-face event on 14th of June in central London. This is going to be a one-day workshop focused on measuring and managing your Scope 3 emissions. So that's indirect emissions. It's open to professionals from organisations of all sizes and sectors. We'll be convening an expert panel discussion, plus co-creative workshops and networking where you can meet like-minded peers and share challenges, opportunities and action. You can find full details on that and register by searching ED Scope 3 Workshops. For today's episode, though, I think we're off for a well-deserved drink and a bit of rest and relaxation, so that really is everything. So it's a goodbye from Matt.
Goodbye.
And a goodbye from me. Goodbye.